You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 12th of January 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we're going to get into some different news today, since all we've pretty much been covering for the last few days is the events that have been happening in America. And before we get into the main news story, there's something that I missed a couple of weeks back. Somebody called Luke Hunter, who some of you may be aware of, has been sentenced to 4 years for terrorism-related offences. Now, Luke Hunter appeared a couple of years back. He put himself forward as somebody who should be some kind of an influencer, some kind of a leader, but he really didn't have much qualifications for that. He tried to debate Count Dankula and came off particularly badly, and Millennial Woes, I think, did a podcast or a speech denouncing him. After that, he tried to set up his own website. I think he interviewed me at one point, and we talked about the hidden British history that we have, the hidden British Christian history that we have. After that, he decided to take a bit of a violent course and found himself getting banned from just about every chat room he went into. He would be banned from. And it was quite obvious he had some mental problems. He was autistic, and he actually had to have a responsible adult in the dock with him. I believe he's 23 years old. Now, he's been sentenced to 4 years. And as I say, he was autistic. We also have the teenager from Durham, who we just knew as the teenager from Durham, who was given 6 years for terrorism-related offences. He's now been named as Jack Reed because he's 18. But the crime actually took place when he was aged 15. He was autistic as well. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because we know we should be looking out for the Satanist types, and that it's the Satanist types that are likely to start inciting violence. And it also seems the autistic types are likely to start inciting violence. And I really don't like to say that. I know autism is a disability, and you don't want to tar everybody under the same brush. But we should be more observant than we usually are with people that are autistic. As I say, this Luke Hunter ended up being banned from lots of chat rooms because people didn't want to associate with him. In the press reports, they're saying that he was an influencer. I don't think he influenced anyone. People just didn't want to have anything to do with him because he was promoting violence all the time. I think the really sad thing about this is that just before he got arrested, he seemed to have calmed down a bit. He'd got himself a girlfriend, and perhaps he wasn't being so silly. But unfortunately, that's it. That's another young man, 4 years taken away from his life ruined for trying to be the most extreme person online. That's what it boils down to, people trying to outdo one another in how extreme they are. I don't know how credible the idea is that he would have put any of his memes or propaganda into action. I mean, both of these instances, these young lads have been found guilty on things that they had written and memes that they had made, rather than any actual preparations to carry out any terrorist attacks. The teenager from Durham had actually written a list of places to attack, But that was all that they had, I think. I don't think they actually had any weapons or anything else. And that could have just been a fantasy. It could have been something he was writing about. I don't know. It's just very sad that we have these young people that go off the rails and they think that violence is the only solution. The reason why they end up thinking that is because when people try to have a peaceful solution and try to talk these problems through and try to come to ways that we can avoid the problems that we're facing as a race, people end up getting silenced and censored. And when you take away somebody's ability to speak and communicate, they really don't have many other options left other than to use physical force to get their point across. This is the tragic thing about the removal of the ability to speak from the public sphere. As we see right now, they have cut Donald Trump's telecommunications. They have effectively cut his telephone cables so that he can't speak to his 88 million followers on Twitter and on all these other social media accounts. And all these other Trump supporters are now being censored. That's half of America that support Donald Trump. That's half of America that are now being censored. They're being told that they cannot discuss their views. Where do they think that's going to end? And I'm not advocating violence here. I want us to do all we can to avoid it. And I am saying we need to have free speech so that we don't have violence. Anyway, I want to talk about a different subject today. I want to talk about children being used to indoctrinate adults. And by children, I mean those under the age of 11. The National Trust has come under fire after it was revealed staff and volunteers have been reverse mentored by primary school children to ensure they can explain the ties of their properties to the slave trade and the British Empire. Isn't that sweet? We have children under the age of 11 who have no critical faculties, who will have just accepted everything that their liberal progressive primary school teachers have told them, and they are now being put forward as mentors for adults. And of course, if the adults question the children, they won't be able to answer the questions. They will be accused of being mean to the children. And just to add insult to injury here, these children are, in the majority, they are minorities. So of course, if the adult questions them, they'll be accused of a hate crime, won't they? Child advisory boards have been set up to assist the Trust's staff with their training to ensure that British imperial history is fully represented in the organisation's country houses, according to the charity. And of course, what they mean by that is they don't want to actually teach British imperial history. They want to teach history as reimagined through the eyes of the descendants of foreigners, through the eyes of the descendants of people that didn't have a civilization, that were living in the ruins of a civilization, people that lived in India, that lived in Pakistan, that weren't capable of forming a lawful functioning society. That's why the British were there. We got rid of the thuggy cult. We got rid of the tradition of burning the wives alive when the husbands died. We brought law and order to the country. Then some people may have died. Bad things may have happened. But that is a part of India's history. That is a part of Pakistan's history. That is a part of Africa's history. That is not a part of British history. British history should be teaching about the good things that we did, and it should be seen through the eyes of the indigenous British people, because they were the people that were here in Britain at the time. They thought that what they were doing was good, and it was accepted as good by everybody else at that time. And that's the way that it should be taught. It's like when you look at history, you look at primary source documents, which mean the documents that were written at the time of the history that you are studying. And because they were written at the time of the history you are studying, it means that they are going to be the most accurate. And when we look at the British imperial history, we don't see them complaining about slavery. We don't see them complaining about mistreatment of the natives. We see them making statues to these great heroes, these great philanthropists, these wonderful people that did all that, that dedicated their lives to doing all that they could for peoples in foreign lands. And when they ended up making a fortune, they, instead of spending all that on themselves, they were philanthropic with it. They built places like Bristol, they built hospitals, they built homes for the poor, they built schools for bright children. People like Cecil Rhodes set up his scholarship, which is now full of people that are calling for Cecil Rhodes statues to be pulled down. They wouldn't even be at university if it wasn't for his scholarship. So they're not talking about fully representing British imperial history. They're talking about rewriting history and telling it through the eyes of the newcomers who have only been here since the end of the war. Don't forget, Britain was 99.9% white up until the end of the Second World War, or shortly after. The backlash comes after the National Trust was accused last month of bias over the team of academics it hired to investigate the ties of its properties to the slave trade and empire. The efforts are part of the Colonial Countryside Project, which is looking at 11 country houses managed by the Trust and investigating their links to Africa, the Caribbean, and India. And what they're really trying to do is they're trying to say that these country houses and the people that lived in them, if they had a tenuous link to the slave trade, then they must be bad people, they must be castigated, they should be paying money to black people today that don't have any claim to that money. I mean, why is it that we look at slavery and when we say, well, black people should not have to work for their keep? Everybody has to work for their keep, but for some reason we look back at the slavery system and we say, all those people who were slaves, they should not have had to work for their keep. How would they have survived if they didn't have to work for their keep? And a lot of these people that they're saying had these links to slavery, people like Edward Colston, they had actually made their fortune before they had any links to slavery. And Edward Colston's only link to slavery was that he was heading a trade organization. And human resources, labor, was something that was traded back then. It's not like people were just kidnapping these black Africans and then forcing them to work for nothing. They were purchasing black Africans from other black Africans, and then they were expecting them to work on a farm in exchange for food, housing, clothing, medical care, creche facilities, and a pension. It's not like they were expecting them to work for nothing. It's not like they didn't actually pay for them. These slave traders, they paid a fortune for these slaves, and then they sold them on to effectively the employers who also paid a fortune for them and then looked after them. And then they were paid for a third time when the British Empire decided to legalize slavery. So these black slaves have actually been paid for three times in all. And they claim reparations? It's ludicrous the way we look at slavery. Everybody in the world has a history of using slavery at one point or another. Millions of white people have been enslaved. They've been enslaved by their own people, and they've also been enslaved by Muslims. And the Muslim slave trade was far worse than the white slave trade. The white slave traders who took black Africans to America were so concerned for the health and well-being of their black male slaves that they actually brought black female slaves over for them so that they could have them as wives, so that they could have conjugal recreation. The Muslim slave traders, they just castrated all their black male slaves because they didn't want to run the risk of the black male slaves raping any of the Arab women. So you can see two completely opposite ways of looking at the slave trade, and instead of saying, well, the white slavers were actually the most benevolent slave employers in the whole of history, we come out with these Hollywood nonsense stories that they mistreated them, they brutalized them, that for some reason they shouldn't have had to work for their keep. White people had to work for their keep as well. Primary school children have formed the Child Advisory Boards, where they reverse mentor National Trust staff and volunteers about colonial legacies according to the University of Leicester, which is collaborating in the project. Children will also hold public talks and attend conferences. So it's not just that these children are giving these speeches, they're the advisors. Adults are being taught by children. This is something that it says in the Bible, that children will be their rulers, children will be their teachers. Part of a punishment for not having enough of a zest for the truth, I believe the wording is, a zeal for the truth. You know, truth hurts. And the more our society is filled with lies and based on lies, the harder it is to confront the truth and accept the truth. And the longer we go without accepting the truth, the worse things will become. Now we have children teaching us. It was not compulsory for the staff and volunteers across the organisation to attend, the trust said. But of course, it would have been implied that if they don't go, they won't get promotion. If they don't go, they will be seen as being racist or Islamophobic. And if they do go, they'll get brownie points, won't they? So they may well say it's not compulsory for them to go, just like they said it's not compulsory for people to support Black Lives Matter in the mainstream media. That, of course, if they didn't, they would be accused of being racist. Reverse mentoring pairs people who might otherwise not come together, according to the government. It ensures mutual benefit to both the mentor and the mentee. The mentee gains new skills and perspectives, and the mentor gains valuable insights. What new skills and perspectives are these National Trust people going to get from Black children that have been brainwashed into hating white people and thinking that white people enslaved them and that white people are the reason why they don't have the same life outcomes as whites? And of course, we know the reason why they don't have the same life outcomes as whites is because they're a different race. They have a different average IQ, for a start, before we even go looking into their history and their abilities as a race, which are completely different to ours. The Trust said 100 primary children, most of whom are of African, Caribbean, and South Asian heritage, have visited 10 National Trust houses to craft fiction and short essays, which are then presented to live, print, and digital audiences. And of course, this so-called fiction is supposed to be exactly how it was during the British Empire, and they will be talking about lurid experiences of oppression and violence against the Black people and the non-whites, and they'll be portraying the white people, the benevolent white people who brought civilization to these countries, as violent, barbaric sadists. We know how this goes. Conservative MP Sir John Hayes told the Sunday Telegraph, "It is a source of sadness that the National Trust are out of touch with the reality of militancy that they are explicitly endorsing, out of tune with their increasingly disillusioned members, and running out of time to put these wrongs right." And it's good that we actually see a Conservative MP that is saying this, but we can't forget that the whole of the government were talking about what a wonderful thing Black Lives Matter is without bothering to actually look into the organisation and their calls to destroy the nuclear family, to defund the police, destroy capitalism. And it's just a Marxist communist front. And here we have the National Trust that are seeking to placate Black Lives Matter. And the National Trust look after stately homes and places with statues in. The enemy of Black Lives Matter, instead of saying we need to be protecting these places, they're bending over backwards for them, for the very people that are most likely to destroy these houses if they get their hands on them, and they're trying to placate them. They should be saying, what you're doing is wrong, destroying these statues, graffitiing these statues. These were good people. They did what they could. All you have to look at to see a really good story of somebody in the British Empire that quite clearly put the interests of the natives before the interests of his own is General Gordon. And I believe he was a good example of what the people in the British Empire were like. And the National Trust should be there to guard our history from this foreign revisionism. They should be there to make sure that our history is seen through the Indigenous British people's eyes and not through the eyes of people from other countries. They can have that history in their own countries, can't they? If India wants to tell a history that portrays the British Empire as being bad and all white people as being guilty for something, and they want to have a history like that, fair enough, that's their history. The same for Africa. But in Britain, we should be teaching a history that is British-centric, that raises up the British people, that gives them good people to emulate, doesn't tell them that all their ancestors were the bad guys, because we weren't the bad guys. 99.9% of everything that we have in civilization was created by white people. These people that are attacking us, they wouldn't even know how to read or write if it wasn't for white people. They wouldn't even be wearing clothes if it wasn't for white people. And yet we don't get any gratitude from them. We just get told that we are the reason why they have all the problems that they have. Another Conservative MP, Andrew Morrison, added, "Given recent concerns over the use of trust assets to pursue an agenda by its leadership, I am not entirely comfortable that the sensitive issue of children's education is safe in its hands." I would say quite clearly it's not safe in the National Trust's hands. If this is the sort of thing that they're going to be teaching them and they're going to be trying to indoctrinate their adults with, he says, "In my view, the Trust should concentrate on looking after its sites for the benefit of the visiting public, who by and large don't want to be indoctrinated." They don't. There's a big movement to stop all of this. I mean, the National Trust even forced their volunteers to wear rainbow badges a while back, forcing them to, the majority of them, because they're elderly, to go against their conscience, to go against their freedom of conscience, and to proclaim their support for something that most of them don't support. And it's the same here. They want to indoctrinate the public with this, and it rubs the public up the wrong way. They say they want to put these things into context, and what they mean by that is to run down the person that is being celebrated. As if Francis Drake is being celebrated because of some bad mistreatment of slaves. He's being celebrated because he defeated the Spanish Armada. And it's the same with all these statues and memorials. These people are being memorialized because they were good people and they did good things for Britain. If that meant some things that weren't so good for another country on the other side of the world, so what? The whole point of being British and doing what you can for the British people is to do what you can for the British people. The same as India does what it can for the Indians. Africa should do what it can for the Africans. That's the way the world works. We can't have white people doing all they can for everybody else, and any time they speak up for their own interests, they get accused of being racist. That's like having an individual who, instead of working for his own benefit, he just works for everybody else's benefit. And any time he says, "Well, I would like to work for my own benefit here," he gets told he'd be racist to do that. And he starves to death because he's not actually doing anything to provide for himself. It's insane, this idea that we have that white people as a group should just be doing everything they can for all these other groups. The way it's supposed to work is each group does what it can to advance the interests of its own group. That's what these races are that we have. They are people groups that should be competing against the other races to advance their own interests. And the one that's best should rise to the top. And once they are at the top, they need to make certain that they stay at the top. Otherwise, it's going to be worse for everybody else, isn't it? You want the very best quality people to be at the top, ruling things and influencing things. Not the worst people. You want the people with the best qualities. And those that work together in the people group and show charity and mercy within their own people group, they're going to be the best people, But of course, now that we've introduced usury into the system, instead of having the people that are the most creative and the most industrious rising to the top, we have the people that are the most greedy and that have the worst traits. But that's getting a little bit off course here. A National Trust spokesman said Colonial Countryside is a project started in 2018 at 11 National Trust houses. The participation of the children, which has now concluded, has tested new ways of working with relevant staff at selected properties, enabling us to hear and reflect the children's responses. It was not a compulsory exercise for staff and volunteers across the trust. Why should they be wanting to listen to what black children have to say? What does that have to do with British history? The British history should be about the way that the British people looked at it, not the way that black children have been indoctrinated to think about it. And don't forget, black Africans never had a written language, so they never had any history. They never had any history that was written down. And the history that these black children have is a fake history that's been given them. It's either a fake history telling them that they created the pyramids and they've been kept down by white people, or it's a history that tells them that they're descended from slaves, and if it wasn't for the white man's racism, they would have fast cars and gold necklaces and gold chains and all the things that they want to have. It's a completely false history, because they can't tell them the truth, that they really never created anything. And the reason for that is because they're a different race and they have different ways of doing things. That's why they look different. It's because they are different. Form and function are intimately connected. If something looks different, it's because it is different. The backlash comes as the trust faced accusations of bias over the makeup of its team of historians that are taking part in the four-year project. 9 historians are working with the 100 primary school children to study each National Trust property and its connections to slavery. The academics are led by Corin Fowler, a historian at the University of Leicester, who wrote the book Green Unpleasant Land, Creative Responses to Rural England's Colonial Connections. Why on earth would you have somebody that hates Britain leading this team to look into colonial connections? It's quite obvious this Corin Fowler hates Britain just by the title of the book, Green Unpleasant Land. Another member of the team, Katie Donnington, researches transatlantic slavery and created a video for the Museum of London Docklands last year highlighting the colonial history of a statue of the slave owner Robert Milligan. So quite clearly they say here, the slave owner Robert Milligan, the colonial history. The statue of Robert Milligan wasn't put up because he was a slave owner. The statue of Robert Milligan would have been put up because he was a great philanthropist. Where is the mention of the actual reason why the statue was put up? This is what I mean by they are ignoring primary source documents. They are ignoring the primary witnesses and rewriting history here. She has also shared articles about the toppling of the statue of the slave trader Edward Colston in Bristol. Edward Colston was not a slave trader. He was the head of a merchant trading company that dealt in everything that it's possible to buy and sell for a short period of time. And his wealth was made before he joined this organization. One of her articles says, "The statue is symbolic of a history which has entrenched inequality. Dismantling the statue should be a first step in understanding and dismantling structural racism. I don't think it should be reinstated." So what is she saying here? She's saying that the races are unequal, and that's down to structural racism. We didn't even have black people in the country, as I said, up until 1956. 99.9% of Britain was white. There may have been a few non-whites in the docks, but not any statistically relevant number of them. This so-called structural racism she talks about, it doesn't exist. How would you get rid of it if it did exist? Well, you would call for a meritocracy, wouldn't you? And they don't call for a meritocracy. What they call for is racism against white people. They don't call for a meritocracy. The fact they don't call for a meritocracy shows that The reason why there are these differences, as she puts it, entrenched inequality, is because the races are different. A third member, Marion Gwynne, is a heritage consultant on the team and specialises on how assets and artefacts are connected to colonial atrocities, according to her website. So this team has been deliberately put together just to attack white people, attack our history, tell us we're bad people, and campaign for our wealth to be transferred over to other people. Foreigners, basically, that have been here for the last 70 years. They may have a piece of paper that tells them they're British citizens, but their ethnic heritage tells us that they have nothing to do with us. Why aren't they in their own countries, building up their own countries? Why aren't they campaigning against atrocities in their own countries? Why are they over here trying to make out we carried out atrocities? We're obviously the most generous, charitable, merciful people in the world because we allow them into our countries in the first place. And we allow them to share it in our heritage by allowing them to use the same name as us. And they repay us by telling us we carried out colonial atrocities against them. A fourth previously announced full solidarity with Cambridge professor Priyamvada Gopal for her long-standing research into anti-colonial resistance struggles. And I think she's the one that has came out with lots and lots of very anti-white tweets she's come out with. National Trust properties reveal a range of colonial links, including slave-produced sugar wealth, East India Company connections, black servants, Indian loot, Francis Drake and African circumnavigators, colonial business interests, holders of colonial office, Chinese wallpaper, Victorian plant hunters and imperial interior design, academics from the University of Leicester wrote. Sugar wealth, slave-produced sugar wealth. Who does she think's going to pick the sugar cane if you didn't have slaves doing it at the time? If you didn't have people employed to do it, we didn't have machinery. We had to use farm labour to do this. They were called farm machinery. I mean, a term that gets used for slaves is obsolete farm machinery, because that is what they were. It's not like they weren't paid for doing it. They were paid in kind. They were expected to work for their keep, just the same as everybody is expected to work for their keep. One of the properties being looked at is Buckland Abbey, the Devon home of Sir Francis Drake, who is obviously a great hero of Britain. It is listed in the review because the explorer depended on the help of an African circumnavigator named Diego to make successful voyages and take possession of substantial riches. So even that is something to be criticised, because he had an African circumnavigator named Diego. Well, Diego is a Spanish name, isn't it? I would suggest that the African circumnavigator was probably a mulatto or a mestizo. But as we know with these things, they will try to claim that these non-whites that had a substantial amount of white DNA, they will claim them for the black ethnicity and won't actually give any credit at all to the white DNA that they had that actually enabled them to do these things that the rest of them aren't capable of doing. And it's not like black Africans even invented a seaworthy boat, let alone managed to map the world and become circumnavigators, like they will try to portray here. And there's nothing wrong with trying to raise up black people's opinion of themselves, but it shouldn't be done at the expense of white people. It shouldn't be done by taking away from us and taking away our history and rewriting our history. They need to find some other way to improve black people's opinion. And they really don't need to improve black people's self-opinion, because every time they do tests on this, they discover that they have vastly inflated opinions of themselves. When they say to them, estimate what results are going to be from this test that we're going to give you, they always massively overestimate the amount that they're going to get from the tests, the results that they're going to get from the test. And it's just a known fact from these psychological tests that they do on the different races. They have far more confidence in their own abilities than white people do. So there really isn't that much need to give them overconfidence. And yet that's what this is about. It's about giving them a history where there was no history. And also attacking whites, of course, and trying to make out that the reason why they don't succeed as well as us is because we're mean to them. We call them names. It's because of the names that they have. That's why they don't succeed as well as us. Conservative MP Andrew Bridgen told The Times last month, "It is about time that the National Trust got their own house in order. The vast majority of the public are just losing confidence in their management and direction. This confirms our worst fears, that they have been taken over by divisive Black Lives Matter supporters. In what way do they feel that it is attractive to the average person who wants to visit a National Trust property?" Well, it's not attractive at all, is it? And they should lose their funding from the government if they're going to start rewriting history to attack white people and tell history from other people's eyes. It's this distortion of our heritage, isn't it? It needs to be stopped. A National Trust spokeswoman said it has high standards when it comes to political impartiality among its employees, including in their social media output. And of course, this is their excuse. They try to claim that all of this anti-white stuff and this anti-racism stuff, which effectively is just taken from whites to give to blacks, they claim that that is politically impartial. It's not politically impartial. It's left-wing progressive politics. The impartial way to deal with racism is to just separate the races. And then there would be no more racism. That's the completely politically impartial way, is to just segregate the races. No more multiculturalism. Black people can have their own black police, their own black teachers, their own black businesses. Fine. And then there is no chance that they could claim they're being discriminated against anymore. But they won't do that. They won't call for that. Some of them will call for it. But the people that are in power won't call for it, because they know that they are better off with multiculturalism. That's why they don't ask for a meritocracy, the other solution to this. They will always just ask for more from the white man to just be given to the non-whites. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.